A few years ago, I took my family to a place called Dutch Wonderland. It's like a little tiny mini amusement park for like little kids. So I get in the car, I put the kids in the back. I don't know about you, when I get in the car, I used to know how to drive in places. I used to know like north, south, west, east. I used to have that pretty much down. I know how to go around my block, know how to go down, you know, to someone else's house. And then I bought a GPS. If this happened to you when you buy a GPS, like your whole sense of direction just shuts down. And you don't know how to go anywhere unless the lady on the machine says, make a left. And you're like, oh, okay. And you're like, otherwise I have no chance. I used to know how to go like some shul and like, forget that. Until she tells me to make a left, I've got no shot. So I'm sitting in the car and I'm driving and everything is fine because I have my trusted GPS woman telling me exactly how to get to Dutch Wonderland. And I'm going there and driving, life can't be any better. And before you know it, I hear her going, in 5 miles, make a left. And I'm like, hello? 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 Totally dead. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. I'm like, Dina, the GPS died. She's like, yeah. I'm like, no, you understand something. I don't know where we are. I don't know where we're going. She's like, you don't know how to like get around. I'm like, no. No sense of direction. It's over. We can be in like Texas for all I know. We're just going to keep on going forever. So I'm like totally panicking. I got 4 kids in the back. I got no idea where I am. I'm not even paying attention to directions. I don't know if I'm going north or south. I don't even know where Pennsylvania is anymore, unless she tells me how to get there. So we're driving and driving and driving. And then finally, I'm calling one friend, another friend, another friend, another friend. Finally, I get one guy on the phone. And he says to me, okay, don't worry. I've been there all the time. I'll tell you how to go. He's like, just go head north and then hang a little bit to the west. And he goes, and when you get off, you'll see a sign that sort of says Pennsylvania. Just get off that exit. I'm like, the exit that sort of says Pennsylvania? I'm like, that's not going to work. So I get off the sign. He goes, when you get off the exit, you're going to see a barn. He's like, just don't worry. Once you see the barn, you'll make a right. And then if you see some Amish people, you go a little bit too far. And then after you see a barn, you'll see a hotel. And then the amusement park's right next to it. I'm like, you're kidding me. I'm looking for an exit that sort of says Pennsylvania and waiting to see a barn and the Amish guy for a hotel. He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. I'm like, honey, time to daven. So my kids are all davening, and thank God, Baruch Hashem works out. I'm like praying and praying and praying after I get off some exit that looks like Pennsylvania to finally see a barn that I saw the barn, and then to see a hotel, and then finally, because God's good, I end up in the amusement park. And on the way back, what was amazing to me is that on the way back, every single time I hit that milestone, I had a flashback as to what I felt like when I was on my way up. And the next year, even though I had a brand new GPS lady who was with me the whole time, as soon as I got to the barn, I had a flashback to a year ago, how I felt until I saw that barn. And as soon as I got to the exit, I felt that again. And it hit me. That happens to us in life sometimes. That's how time works. It just goes. And I don't even know what I ate for breakfast. You ever get this feeling? You go home and you put your keys down. I don't even know where I put my keys. Everything that happened this week is a complete blur. The weeks turn into weeks, turn into weeks, turn into weeks. But then something on the calendar hits. It's Thanksgiving. It's Hanukkah. It's a birthday. And I remember exactly where I was last year this time. You know what I'm talking about? We can almost, although I can't remember yesterday, as I hit the milestone, as I hit the barn every single year, I flash back and I know exactly where I was standing. I knew who I was talking to. Can you remember last Hanukkah, the first night? You can remember last Thanksgiving? Where were you last Thanksgiving Eve? Of course we can. Because time has an amazing way, our memory has an amazing way of flashing back into certain moments, and we can almost gauge our growth from that moment to that moment. And I once heard an amazing idea, and that is exactly why we are so crazy with monumental moments in our lives. That's what we're crazy about Shabbos. That's what we're crazy about Yontifs. One of the benefits of these things is that it allows us checks throughout the path. Where was I last week? Where was I last year? But something hit me as I was preparing, or whilst in closing last night, I wanted to say some things. Something really struck me. What I want to talk about is totally different. It's Thanksgiving, which means not much, except to be thankful, which is good. It's also the yontif that you get to have when you're in yeshiva. Otherwise, you get no other American yontifs do you get except for this one. You get to feel like a real American in this one. But it allows you tonight to almost think back and see where you were a year ago and gauge how much have we grown in 1 year. And I find myself, as I was preparing for tonight, I find myself a little depressed. I was like, where was I a year ago? Is it that different? Did I grow that much? Did my 1 year, a year of time? I know people that would kill for a month of time. I know mothers that would do anything for their kids to have another minute in time. A year in time. And what really did I accomplish in 1 year? What did we do in 1 year? And I'm getting to a point where I'm kind of sick of just being a little bit better. And I want to understand how to explode. What I want to talk about tonight is not how to get a little bit better. We're all on a path. And we go and we go and we go. Not all of us, most of us. And we go and we go and we go a little bit better on this year. Up, down, inspired, not inspired, inspired, not inspired. Great week, bad week. I'm flying. I'm totally in the dumps. And we'll go through this year after year after year. And if you ever keep notes in your Yom Kippur Machzor, you'll find that some of the stuff that we wrote like 3-4 years ago is exactly what we're saying sorry for a year again. Because we sort of seem to like go in like circles a little bit. And every once in a while, I think we ask ourselves, how do we explode? How do we shift? We're going one way. Instead of just being better, how do we totally shift directions and go this way? And go like that. I want to talk a little bit tonight about that. Because I think that if we shift our perspectives, we can go from sort of incremental growth in life to exponential growth in life. So let me take a step back. So sometimes in life you get advice that changes your life in places you never dream of. So I want to share with you how I got my first job out of law school. I went to law school. I'm not a rabbi. I'm a lawyer. The other end of the world from a rabbi. And I'll never forget how I got my first job. You ever, it happens to you sometimes in life where you do something, you try, and then in the middle of trying, God sort of says, listen, step to the side, you did great, thank you, I got this. You ever get that feeling? And then like, from then on in, until it's over, he's just like running the show. So, I was in Columbia for law school, and the way it works in Columbia is that you have to do this thing called off-campus interviewing, where you go to a hotel, and you have to pick your firms. You come out of law school, and yet there's hundreds of firms, and you got to get your job. So you choose your firms based on where your grades are and what you can possibly get. And the chachma of off-campus interviewing is you have to pick the right firms. You pick the top firms, and you don't get in, you may not have a job. If you pick the bottom firms too low, you could have gotten better. So you spend the whole time picking, and I chose this firm and that firm, and the whole entire days of planning. And then at the end of the third day, whoever's done with the interviews, they leave the extra interviews around. And if you come in and there's an open spot, you can go this and you can go that, fine. So first day comes in, it's excruciatingly. You're there, interview day after day, minute after minute, 1 day, 2 days. Finally, the third day is up, everyone goes out, they're already partying, it's over. They got their jobs. I have my offers, but I have 3 full days. So I go into the thing, and I had this one firm that I dreamed of. This firm in the city, Davis Polk & Wardwell. I read about it in a book, like very white shoe. The guy actually ran for president. Everything's mahogany. This was like a dream for me to hit this firm. But whatever, a little bit out of my grade league. So it's the last day, and I look at the board, and there's an open spot for Davis, Polk, and Wardwell. And I'm like, why don't I just roll the dice, right? He runs the world anyways. So I go in there, I put my name down, the last spot of the day. When you get to the last spot of the day, everyone's just blown. I get in there, it's my turn, I'm so excited. And I sit down, and I'm looking in front of a guy, and I'm like, oh, God. The guy's in front of me, sweet man, Asian guy. And I quickly found out that he spoke no English, and I speak no Asian. So this was going to be one heck of an interview. So he looks at me, and he goes, right away, it's going the wrong way. He looks at me and goes, what's your name? And I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, you ever get that? I'm like, can you repeat that, please? And he goes, your name. I'm like, I don't, Charles Harari. And he's like, and he goes back and forth. I have no idea what he's saying. At one point, if this happened before, you've seen someone, you think it's one question, but it's a totally different question. Right? He asks me, why do you want to be a lawyer? I heard, do you want to be a lawyer? So he goes, why do you want to be a lawyer? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, I'm like, very much, sir. And he's like, this is how it was going, my Davis Polk interview. It was going down quick. So after like 3 minutes, we had nothing to talk to each other about because I didn't say what he was talking about. How many times can you say, can you please repeat yourself? It was just like sort of waiting for the clock to be over. So he's got nothing to do. So he stares at my resume and he looks up and he goes, you know Talmud? And I'm thinking, oh no, I heard Talmud. But he didn't say Talmud. I'm like, what rhymes with Talmud? I'm like, I can't think of any words. So I'm like, did you just say Talmud? He goes, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I know Talmud. He goes, really? I'm like, yeah. So he goes, wait, you know Talmud? I said, I happen to know Talmud, yes. In fact, I've known Talmud since I was in elementary school. He goes, oh. And I'm like, I don't know where this is going, but I am enjoying it. He goes, I don't know about Talmud. He goes, all I know is that I was in the office of top tax partner in the firm. And on his shelf were books filled of complicated tax codes. And at the end of all those books, there was one book that was a little different. The binding was different with different letters. And I said to him, what is that? I happened to have been a firm guy. He goes, what is that? He goes, oh, you think the tax code is hard. The Talmud is 10 times harder. So he goes, you knew it since elementary school? He goes, you must be a genius. I'm like, well, I don't like to brag. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I think of myself as a regular person, you know, but, you know, you can think of me any way you want, but, you know, we're all just people in God's eyes. He goes, it is an honor to meet you. I'm like, it is an honor to meet me. Thank you very much. I'm like, me and my genius friends will just go out and party with the Talmud later on for the heck of it. So the interview sort of ended after he finished drooling, and I walked out, and lo and behold, I get home that night, and on my messages, the managing partner saying, we'd like to invite you back for a callback to see Davis Polk & Wardwell. I'm thinking, you just can't get better than this. I'm like, you're awesome, this is great, but you know what? They're going to find me out as soon as I get to Davis Polk. I mean, like, it was fun while it lasted. So I get to Davis Polk, and the fun just begins. And this interview, finally at the end of the interviews, they send you around with two people like sort of your age. And that's a very important part for them because they want to see like if you can mesh into the culture, the Davis Polk culture. So I'm sitting around the table, we're in Prime Grill, and the guy's looking at me, he's an older man, he's a second year associate. And just like when it couldn't get any weirder, he looks at me and goes, so, I see we're in a kosher restaurant, I noticed that you're a Jewish guy. I said, oh yeah, I'm a Jewish guy, you better believe I'm a Jewish guy. What do you know about the Jewish people? So he goes, I got to tell you something. He goes, I'm a Marine. I'm like, okay, sir. So he goes, and we respect nobody except for one group. He goes, the Israeli commandos. And I'm thinking, oh, now I'm an Israeli commando. I'm like, does it get better? I'm like, that's correct, sir. So he goes, proud to meet you. I'm like, yes, sir, proud to meet you too. So that went really well as well. So we go back to Davis Polk, and next thing you know, I get a call saying, we'd love to have you in our firm. A genius commando nonetheless. So that's how I got my first job. So we're sitting around the table, which is like God just playing his game. We're sitting around the table that day as he's telling over his Marine stories. So I say to him, what is it that you love, that you respect so much about the Israeli commandos? So he says the following to me. He says, you know what they have better than any other army that I've ever seen? He goes, they know who they are. And they know who they're fighting. He goes, when you're in peacetime, when you're this massive army, and you're not fighting a war every single day of your life, you forget who you are. You think you're the strongest army in the world. You think you have the best navy in the world. You think you're untouchable. You forget that you have flaws because you're not being tested every single day. He goes, but the Israelis? No. They're a tiny little country with a tiny little budget in an area where they're always being beaten and battered. So you better believe they know every single one of their flaws. They know every single one of their weaknesses. They know what they're good at. They spend their entire lives knowing who they are. Because, but you know what else they know that we don't have? And this is amazing because we had this conversation November of 2000. Because they know who they're fighting. We don't know who we're fighting. America, we don't know if this is an enemy or that's an enemy. We have no idea. When you go to the Israeli army, you understand that you're fighting and you're fighting in the ground. You're fighting in the middle of an alleyway. You know, they know who they're fighting so well that once you know who you are and you know who you're fighting, you can actually make a big difference. You can be the best. And I was like, wow. And from that moment on, I never forgot those words. How do we become great in life? How do we explode? Not just a little bit better. Why do we want to be a little bit better? Why be better when we could be amazing? Why settle for a little better if we could explode in life? It's when we know clearly who we are. And we know who we're fighting. Because if either of those two answers is not clear, we're walking around with the wrong fighting, the wrong battles in darkness, circles and circles and circles. I don't know about you, but I feel sometimes I'm just going around in circles. And this is right, and going this and this. Am I going the right way, this way? Am I climbing the right hill? Who knows? But until we have that clarity, we can't take it to the next level. And so what I'd like to talk about today is those two answers. Because if we can solve those two answers tonight, my hope and prayer is that all of us walk out of here a little clearer. Not that we can be better one day, but with the knowledge at least how to walk out of here tonight and explode. So who are we? So I'll tell you a story. A few years ago, never forget, it was a Shabbos afternoon, I was in a hotel. And I was up to my fifth dessert, which means I was just getting going. And you ever get this feeling sometimes when you're having dessert sometimes, usually on Shabbos? Because the whole game of Shabbos, by the way, is trying to eat more than you breathe, right? That's the rule, right? You go down, you sit, you know what I'm talking about, right? You sit down at the meal, and then at the meal you get the fish, and after the fish you have to have the main, and then if you have one mains and two mains and the chicken and then the fish, and you got to have this and the kugel, and then, God forbid, the game of Shabbos is not to eat till you're full, it's to eat until it's too painful to not eat, you know what I'm saying? And then when it's all over, then dessert comes in, and you're like, well, I got to keep on eating dessert, and then God forbid, from the dessert table to the bedroom, should you get hungry, then you have nosh for the road. So that in the hallway, God forbid, should you have a minute in which you're breathing and not eating, you fill yourself with something. And then Shabbos comes the next morning, and you're like, I'm starving. It's 12 o'clock. I haven't eaten yet. Do you know what I'm talking about? So it's Shabbos afternoon, and I am flying because I'm on dessert number like 5. And I have this feeling like I'm... And then the worst is when you're wearing pants, and it's getting tight, and you go for the extra dessert, and you go, oh, I really can't. I can't have that. But I really want it. But I can't have it. But I really want it. So what do? What is the best way to eat what you want and not feel guilty? What do you say? Not at Shabbos. Somebody help me here. What do you say? I'm going to start my diet tomorrow. It's the best excuse ever. Because as soon as you say that, the weight is as good as lost. So you already lost all your weight. So now eat whatever you want, because tomorrow you're going to poof and you're back to where you want to be. Am I right? It's the best trick in the game. So I'm sitting around and I'm like, this is it. I am going to diet tomorrow. So I have my 5th and 6th and 7th diet tomorrow. And that's it. After Shalosh Shudas, I was feeling sick. That night I went to bed and I said, that's it. Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I usually get up at 7. I'm getting up at 6 and I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go 1 hour on the treadmill tomorrow. Sunday morning, no excuses. It's over. 5:59, next morning, 6 o'clock. The alarm goes off. I hit the alarm and I hear a voice in my head. Time to get up. You got to get up. Man, you're too big. You told yourself you're going to start dieting. This is good for you. Go on the treadmill. And as I'm about to get up, I hear another voice. The voice says, what are you, crazy? It's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's Sunday. Go back to bed. And I'm thinking, I like that guy. That guy's a good lawyer. Keep that guy going. And the bail lawyer gets up and goes, whoa, wait a second. Come on, Charlie. You had 17 desserts yesterday. Get up and go to gym. I know it's hard to just get out of bed, but once you get out of bed, it's going to be awesome. And I'm like, and the other guy gets up and uses the best line ever. He goes, what are you talking about? If you get up at 6, you're not going to have a good davening. You're going to have bad kavana. It's bad for God. Trust me. God wants you to stay in bed, which is like checkmate. And I go back and forth, voice, till finally I go, you know what? I like the guy on my left, and I go back to bed. What just happened? Tell me, anyone have this same experience a little bit over here? What just happened? In our heads, there are two separate voices that are always talking to us, that are always telling us two separate things. What is going on? The answer is, we are schizophrenic. What do I mean? We are. Because here's how it works. God creates a world. And here's how God creates a world. Here's what I'm going to do. First thing I'm going to do when I create the world, I'm going to create angels. And angels are awesome because they are all spiritual. Everything in the world that feels good is spiritual. Right? When you hold a baby for the first time, you feel something deep that's called spirituality. When you see something, when you give something to somebody and it feels awesome. You know that feeling you get when you're volunteering and you have this, like, it's almost like an addictive, great, deep feeling? That's called spirituality. If you ever closed your eyes in a song and you felt something different, that's called spirituality. If you ever daven really through, that's called spirituality. Spirituality is the deepest, most happiest depth of feeling that we have. And God created angels and he said, here's the deal. You guys are unbound by any physicalness. Just be you. That's awesome being an angel. They're connected to God. They're all spiritual. It's awesome. He creates this world and I go, so that's not fun. So I create animals. And he creates an entirely different species. All they care about is physical. They're animals. Eating and chasing and ego. This is why when he created them, he creates them with four legs and they're looking down at the floor because that's who they are. Humans can maybe condition them otherwise, but an animal at its core is only physical. Right? Animals care about one thing, themselves. Right? You never see a lion pass by a waterhole and there's a zebra there. And zebra's like, oh no. Mr. Lion, listen, I know you're supposed to eat me, but can I just get the day off? And the lion's like, I don't think so. And the zebra's like, please, I'm having a rough day. I just got to fight with my wife. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm drinking this water. I'm getting a stomachache. You ever drink like the Israeli water? Like, I'm drinking this water. I just got a stomachache. This ain't working out for me. And the lion goes, okay, that's fine. Take one day. Tomorrow I got you. He goes, that's cool. Thanks so much, Mr. Lion. I appreciate your mercy. Never happens ever. Because that's not how it works when you're a lion. Animals care about one thing, the physical world. Angels care about one thing, spirituality, meaning, purpose, all that stuff. And God says, I'm going to create a world, and it's going to be all spiritual, and it's going to be all physical. But that's not going to be fun, so here's what I'm going to do. After I create all of those things, I'm going to create another species called human. And they're going to be both. I'm going to create this animal with a physical body that's the same physical stuff. But inside that human, I'm going to put an angel. I'm going to put a piece of the divine. And so inside each and every person is two competing lawyers. Jewish lawyers, which makes it even worse. The body saying, don't do that. Eat, sleep, get upset. Physical, you. And the spiritual saying, what are you, crazy? Purpose, meaning, don't worry about it. You're bigger, you're a soul. And the challenge of life at its core is who do we define ourselves as? The challenge of who we are is which voice wins. Because every single one of us has both. And every single one of us is constantly being beaten and battered by both sides. Get upset. Are you crazy? Don't get upset. You think it's her? It's not God talking to you? You want this, go do this. Don't do this. Be stronger than that. And every second of every day, diet, eat. Every second we have one person telling us to be great. And one side telling us to not be great. And so we think in our lives that the first thing we have to do is just do great. Do mitzvahs. Just go. And we can spend our entire life since we're little kids, every single second, just doing. But the problem is that that's step two. Most of us forget step one. Before we do, we have to be. And God says, before you decide what you're doing that day, you have to decide who you are. Because who are we? Are we a body or are we a soul? Not what we do, who we are. Who are we? Who am I? I have a body, but who am I? Am I my body? Am I my heart? Am I my mind? There's a concept in science called neuroplasticity, which means that you can control your mind. Basically, your mind are neurological connections. You can control your mind, do anything you want. I was once speaking at a conference once, and there was a whole bunch of doctors in the room talking about something totally different, but happiness. And the doctor came over to me and goes, Charlie, I love what you said. And in fact, neuroplasticity shows you that whatever you're saying works. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you can control your mind. He goes, I'm not really a religious man, but I'm telling you, because I learned the science, you can control your mind. I said, who can control your mind? He said, you. I said, who's you? Who is you? He goes, you. I'm like, who you? And he goes, oh, I know where you're going. I'm like, you better believe it. I got soul, but I'm not a soldier. He's like, oh, okay. That's it. He's like, I never thought of it. Who are we? Because if we don't know this so clearly, where are we going? If you don't wake up in the morning and know this so clearly, like it's black and white, if we don't identify with this one piece, If we wake up in the morning and we look in the mirror and see a body and go, that's me, we're totally missing it. And so we do things and do things and do things because we think we are acting because that's what we want. But we don't know who we are. And so the first thing we have to do in life, according to the Israeli army, is figure out who we are. So who are we? We're a soul. That's who you are, just a soul. And if you're a soul, that means you're not bound by anything. Nothing in the world bounds you. Your body works for you. And just like I don't think for a second that when I'm playing my remote control car, that that car is me, even though when I'm playing remote control car, the car is driving around because of me, I can't think and you can't think that the body that's asking you to do things is you. It needs stuff and you have to control it. But that's not who we are. And we get lost that way because we get offended and we want to look nice and we want more stuff. And so we think that's what we are. But that's not who we are. We are a soul. And at our core, we control the body because it needs to control it. But that's not who we are. Now, what does that mean? And I want to go one step deeper. If a soul is completely unbound, then what does it mean that we're a soul? I'll never forget, when I first had my kid, my first night, I'll never forget, we went to the hospital, and the hospital was so not what I expected it to be. You know, you see people giving birth on movies, it's totally different than real life. So after the kid comes out, he's like, is he supposed to have a cone head like this? They're like, listen, it gets better, gook and all that stuff. So finally, after they wrap him up and they hand it to me, I look down and I had this feeling like, oh my God, this sense of like something shifted in me. I am now a father. But I was never a father before, so what in the world do I do? So when I went to my dad, I go, how in the world do you know how to be a father? I didn't take classes in being a father. I never practiced as a kid. So he goes, here's how it works. And he goes, first you have to realize that you're a father. And then you'll figure out what to do. The biggest problem is some guys don't realize that they're fathers and they act like they're not. And some people don't realize that they're married and they act like they're not. Some people don't realize that they're Jews or that God loves them and they act like they're not. But the first thing that we have to do, he said, because once you realize that you are who you want to be, then you'll figure out what to do. You want to be a great father? Then be a great father. And as soon as you own that you're a great father, you can figure out what to do next to live your dream. For so many of us, we live with such boundaries. They tell us when we're little kids, you can't be, you're not, you're not, you're not, you're not. But at our core, at the deepest of who we are, we want to be somebody. When we get inspired with a song, we have a vision of who we are. I want to be X. I want to be a great this. I want to be amazing. And we feel it at our core. And it's only when it's times of inspiration does it come out. Because so many times in our lives do we think, do we see, do we get reinforced that we can't be great. If I do enough great stuff, one day I'll be great. If I do and do and do and do and do, then one day, I'll be. And we'll do our whole lives and never be. And as opposed to becoming human beings, we're human doings. And it maybe it's just me, but how many times do you feel like from morning to night, all you're doing is doing, 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 emailing and going and buzzing and going and going and going, and then you have 1 second, finally you get to bed, and you're exhausted, you wake up the next morning, and you just keep on doing again. And you can go your entire lives doing and not being. Not once asking yourself, who do I want to be? How great do I want to be? What kind of father? What kind of person? What kind of friend? What kind of daughter do I want to be? I am not bound by this world. I'm not a body. I'm a soul. And as a soul, that means I am not bound by anything. I could be whatever it is I want to be. That's who I am. So what is it that I want to be? When we live our lives unbound, when we live our lives, and the first thing we do in our lives is not worrying about what we're going to do, but understanding and asking ourselves who we want to be, we connect to our soul. And that's who we are. The biggest problem we have in life is that we have so much potential. You have so much potential. We have so much talent. Our greatest fear is not failure. Our greatest fear is not becoming as great as we know we could be. It's because as we look in life, we don't know what to do to be great. And we forget that it's the exact opposite. We become great. And once we become great, we say to ourselves, now I got to figure out what to do. Because I am whoever I want to be. And so the first aspect of our lives, the first aspect of what we're doing, is asking ourselves every moment and reminding ourselves that we're not our body, we're our soul. But at our core, our soul is anything we want it to be. But then the question is, what do we got to do? And so I'll never forget when I was in varsity, my last year, I was a senior, and I went to a school down the block called Yeshiva Flatbush, pretty far down the block. And I was a senior, and I was the captain, I was so excited. And my first two games were losses, were dismal losses. I played terrible, the team lost. And I was in the locker room, and the coach says to me, he comes in and my head's down, and most of the stuff that I learned in life, by the way, happens in my locker room. So this is how I learned, through basketball. So the coach looks at me and goes, what's the problem? I said, I'm not the right guy. I'm like, we can't win, and I'm not playing well. I'm just not doing it. So he goes to me, he goes, what is the number one thing you want in basketball? What's your goal? I said, to win. Right? He goes, no. I'm like, no, I didn't say not to win. I said, to win. And he's like, no. I'm like, he goes, that's why you're not a ball player. I'm like, ow. He goes, because you want to win. I'm like, well, what else do you want to do? He goes, real ball players don't want to win. He goes, real ball players want to play. And the difference between a real ball player and one that looks like a real ball player is that a real ball player just wants to get on the court and play. He doesn't want to win, because winning means it's over. By playing as hard as you can, of course, he uses that as what motivates him. Of course, the great players get on the court and they want to be the best they can be. But as soon as they win and it's over, if they walked in and they forfeited, they wouldn't take the win. They love the game. And when you love the game, you wake up every single day and you try to get better at the game. You get on the court and all you care about is winning, playing. And in our lives, there's a big difference between whether or not we play to win or we play to play. Because for so many of us, we grow up and life is comparative. Right? I told the story all the time. I think I told the story once before here. But I had a friend of mine years ago when I started, that was all connected, by the way, when I started on my diet. Back then, I started working out. I don't know if I tell the story in Ornava or not. I started working out and I hit a wall. You know, you go to the gym. First time you go to a gym, by the way, everyone knows this experience. First time you go to a gym, what happens? You go to the gym for the first time, you get on that treadmill and like you lose 100 pounds, right? Because just by standing on a treadmill for 1 minute, it's like you're breathing fire. You know what I'm talking about? You're on the treadmill and you're running and it's like 6 minutes later, you look down, it's like 6 seconds. What are you talking about? Right? And you just keep running. It's like forever. Just getting on the treadmill alone is like amazing. And then just looking at the machines, I was losing weight. It was amazing. But after 5 weeks, 6 weeks, I was hitting a wall. Someone goes to me, Charlie, why don't you get a personal trainer? I go, personal trainer? I'm a guy. I've never been in need. Are you nuts? So finally, one day, one of the things that I do in my company is I run the intern program. So back in those days, it was crazy in terms of, even today, crazy in terms of applications. So I'm sitting there one night, flipping through the applications, and all of a sudden I see that one of them, it says in the hobbies, personal trainer. I'm going, huh, what have we here? I'm about to get my trainer without having to get my trainer. This is the perfect Jew experience. So he comes in, I interview him, and I go, so tell me about yourself. So he goes, well, list law school, that law school, grades, GPA, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, tell me about your training experience. So he goes, what do you want to know? I'm like, tell me about your training experience. He goes, well, you know, I was on a team that trained Mr. Universe. I'm like, you're hired. So he goes, for the law job? I go, yeah, for the law job. You're sure? Yeah, sure. Can you be here tomorrow morning? He goes, yeah. He comes in the next day. He comes in. He goes, so? I'm like, oh, yeah, right here for the law job. Uh-huh. I'm like, here's a building we're buying. He goes into his office. As he sits down, I go right behind him. I'm like, hi, you having a good time here? He's like, yeah. I'm like, what are you doing 12 o'clock every single day for the rest of the summer? So he goes, where do you need me? I'm like, in the gym. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. So I go downstairs, and I'm already, he comes down at 12 o'clock, I'm already in a full sweat. He goes, I'm like, listen, I'm like, tell me what I do. So he goes, all right. So he sees me going down, going through all the machines. So he goes to me, all right, as I'm going through the machines, so he goes, show me what you do. I'm like, show you what I do. I'm like, you see these machines? That's what I do. All of them. He goes, okay, tough guy. Start doing the machines. So I get on the machines. Every person that gets on, I just do more. You do six, I'll do seven. And he goes, and he's literally holding back laughter. So I'm like, what's so funny, Mr. X intern? So he says to me, you're not even working out. He's like, you're doing aerobics for your arms. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you're just doing this. This isn't anything. Like, it's better than eating a hamburger, but that's not working out. So I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, here's how it works when you work out. He goes, the way it really works is that inside your muscles are microfibers. And you have to rip the microfibers. And if you rip them, they grow back stronger. And when they grow back stronger and bigger, you actually grow your muscles. If you're working out and you don't rip your muscle fibers, you're not working out. I'm like, so how do you know? So he says, one rule. The last three have to kill. He goes, I don't care what the person did before you. I don't care what the person did after you. If the last three reps don't kill, you don't grow. And that's how it works sometimes in life. We're trying to grow. We're trying to be great. So we sit down at the bar and we have a choice to make in life. What is greatness? Is it horizontal or is it vertical? Horizontal greatness is I look around to my peer group and see how they're doing. And if they're doing okay and I'm ahead of the pack, I'm doing awesome. If they're all married and I'm married before them, I'm doing great. If I'm married after them, I'm not doing well. If they all have a certain amount of money and I have more to them, I'm rich. Less to them, I'm poor. If my parents are like this, I look at everything around me and I judge how I'm doing. I'm sitting on the bench and just doing more than everybody else. And God says, that's not greatness. You just look better. Greatness is when every single day you do something that makes you rip. And so the biggest problem sometimes that we have, and the reason why we can't attack our soul, is because we're too busy winning. We want to win. And so we go after what we want when we're younger. We're little kids, they teach us. You want to be great, you got to have the best grade in school. And so we want to win. So we got to go for the A. And if we get, even if we kill ourselves, if we don't get the A, we feel like we're losers. And you got, and everyone, I don't know who's gone through this experience in college, it's the worst, right? You go to college, and everything that you're doing, you can have 100,000 extracurricular activities, and you're the president of everything in the world, and you get up to college, and they go, I'm sorry, I don't care if you're the president of everything. What'd you get on that standardized test score? And you're like, no, but you understand, I'm the most, they voted me most likely to succeed. They're like, nobody cares. Test score. Compare. And we think that's how it works. We got to win. We have to win. We have to win in where we are in life. If someone else has more, we feel threatened. If we're not where we're supposed to be, and everyone else in our environment is, we feel like we're just not there. We turn to God and go, why haven't you given it to me yet? I'm here. I'm doing what you need me to do. I shall do something else. I got to win. And we can go our whole lives, forgetting our soul, just making sure that our body looks better than everybody else. So we grow, we get inspired, we don't get inspired. We have a good day, we have a bad day. Things are going great, things are going bad. And here we go on the merry-go-round of life. Up and down and up and down, we don't stop. And we ask ourselves sometimes, why am I not exploding? I know there's something in me that's so great. Why have I not exploded yet? And it's because we don't know who we are. And we're so busy winning, we can't stop. Greatness, being a soul, comes down to one thing. It's playing. It's getting excited about the game of life. It's getting excited about I have a day, and my day needs to be the best day ever. Because when God gives us a soul, he says, here's the deal. I'm going to give you a soul, and I'm going to give you my power. I have one power in this world. It's called Bechira Chafshis. It's called free choice. You can't predict the future. You can't be whatever you're going to be in 15 years. You can't run the race. All you can do is choose. And if you choose right, you become like me. And so in our days, every single day, we're thinking of this, and we're thinking of this, and we're thinking of this, and what am I going to be, what am I going to be, is it going to work out, is it going to work out, is it going to work out, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not here, I can't believe I'm not there, why am I not there, why do I have these kids and not these kids, why is this working, I'm not working, and we're constantly thinking about the future, and God goes, stop. Your whole life is your next choice, is your next bechira? Is your bechira to be a soul, to be who you're supposed to be, or is it to be the body and try to win? And every second of every one of our lives is that challenge. Every right now, you're having that challenge. Tonight, you'll have that challenge. Every second of your life is the challenge of this next choice. Am I who I want to be? Am I a soul that can do anything, that could be anywhere, that could change the world should I want to? What am I bound by? I am a soul. Or am I a body? Here's what I got. Here's what they tell me it is. Here's where I am in the world. I got to push harder to win. And that distinction is the difference between the life that's better and worse and better and worse. What we'll get, what they'll give us, what they won't give us. Will they tell us, do I feel good? How many times in the world have you walked into a room and you felt good and then no one in the world said you look good? Nobody. And you're like, do I not look good? I don't understand. I thought this looked good. It doesn't look good? When you're married, you know this really well. And you come home, you're like, you look good. I'm like, well, I thought I looked good, but nobody told me I looked good. So I must not look good. How many times in life have we done something that is right? And we look over and go, should I do that? I mean, who am I? I'm a nobody. To take on that, to do that, to change the world? No way. I one time asked, Rav Noach Weinberg was the Rosh Yeshiva of Eish HaTorah. I had this chus to learn with him, Bechavrusa, for 6 hours. So I was sitting in his office, and he says to me, Charlie? I said, yes, Rabbi? He goes, you can't hear me?
No, this is for the online.
You can't hear me? Not so much? I'll talk louder. So he says to me, he goes, Charlie? He goes, can you change the world? I said, no. He goes, no? I go, yes. He goes, yes? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, no, yes, Am Yisrael Chai, God save the Queen, I love you, I love Judaism. He's like, you take your medication today? So I'm like, I don't know what to say to this one right now. So he says, can you change the world? And I'm like, I don't know. So he goes, can one person kill 6 million people? I said, yes. So he goes, can one person, what'd I do? I'm like, I need a sound check.
You're fine. Just for the online. Okay.
Can one person save 6 million? And I said, I guess so. He goes, so how come no one has? He said, here's why. Because when we wake up in the morning, we look ourselves in the mirror, you know what we see? Not me. I can't do that. Not me. And when Adolf Hitler, he should burn in hell, woke up in the morning, you know what he said? You better believe I can. You better believe I can. And if you watch what happened in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, you will see one man that said, I don't care. I am moving the world if I need to because I am going to kill those people. And he was sick about it. His whole life was about one thing. And because he was so crazy about it, because he realized what he, one person, could accomplish, guess what? The rest of the world went crazy over him. And if you watch the tapes, and everyone should watch what went on in the 1930s, you see craziness. You see an entire culture of regular, normal people. This is Germany. We're talking about very fine, straight people turned into animals. Animals. They're hiling Hitler, who says, kill Jews. This will never happen because one person was so crazy in what he believed himself, and the person has a power that we can't believe in. And here we are sitting here today, all of us, and God goes, you have no idea who you are. Stop belittling yourself. Stop being a body. Stop being a body. Do you know who you are? You are my kid. You can't change the world. You can't be the person you want to be. You can't be the best daughter ever. You can't be the best sister ever. You can't be the light into the nations. Seriously? No, you don't sense something. I'm not a guy. I can't speak. I'm from here. I'm from there. My parents are like this. I'm from that. I can't. You don't understand. No. Charlie, if you knew me, you would know you're not talking to me. check for the body. That's that body talking and saying, that's right, babe, that's uh-huh, that's it, that's right. Go to sleep early tonight. No problems. You don't have anything big to do anyways. Don't worry, someone else will do it. Rabbi Wallerstein will take care of it. And if you know Rabbi Wallerstein, let me tell you about Rabbi Wallerstein. He is a guy that gets it. Because he knows, I don't care if I win or if I lose. I'm a soul. And my job is every day to push like crazy for what is right. He thinks like a soul. And our job to explode. And here we are at the brink of Mashiach. We are at the end of days. We are at the point where our brothers and sisters are dying on the vine. How many of us are dying for one person to look at us and smile? How many of us walk down the streets and see people that are just asking for anything? The world is dreaming for someone to stand up and take responsibility and say, let's make this better. And we're sitting there going, I can't. I can't get the views, the hits, the money, the this, the that. I can't. I'm just a body. And God goes, no, you are not. You're a soul. Stop winning. Start choosing to be like me. And when we live our lives one day at a time, when we live our lives really one choice at a time, Rabbi Nachman says, when you live your life hayom, one choice, and every choice that you make is, I am a soul, I am a soul, I am a soul. I'm not bound. What happens is you grow and you grow and you grow and you wake up one morning and you're a different human being. Because that's who we really are. That's our destiny. So our job in life is to realize that. The challenge in life is to not allow ourselves to be comfortable with mediocrity. To not allow ourselves to buy the same line, he will take care of it. You don't understand how busy my life is. Trust me, Charlie. Not me. But to wake up in the morning and practice this and push it and kill it until we own it. We are nothing. We're a soul. And we are not bound by anything. Our body follows what I want. And I want greatness. My life will not be mediocre. I'm going to go for it all. I'm going to go for the depth. I want happiness. But not the happiness that I get in the 3 minutes of the physical stuff that goes away and I'm empty at the end. I want the happiness that lasts forever. And so every moment of every day, I'm done fighting. I'm done winning. I don't care if I have what she has. I don't care anymore if I walk into a room and I feel like I'm the only one that doesn't have. I don't care. I'm done fighting. I don't have to win. All I got to do is play. And I got to play hard. And if we live this way, but we all live this way, you know what ends up happening? We stop competing with each other. We stop killing each other. We stop worrying about what the other person has and how it threatens my life. We stop being concerned about what's going to be one day when if I, and we start actually living. We look at the person next to us as a teammate and not a competitor. We see our people as who they are. We see the people that we speak to for who they are. And we become who we're supposed to be. And we explode. Because we're already there. And we wake up and say, from now on, I'm going to be this person. Come hell or high water, I will kill myself to be this person. We are there. And we'll fail. That's fine. But we're there. And we have that level of confidence. When we realize who we really are, the world is just waiting for us to change it. It is my blessing to all of us that we realize that it's enough that we fight. Enough that we try to win, that we realize who we are, that you realize your potential, that we realize that we can accomplish whatever we want. And you know what? Even if we can't, we would much rather try and fail than never try at all. We all know it. And we should have the schus to wake up every morning with that feeling, to look at every decision that we make and say, I'm going soul, I'm going soul, I'm going soul, till we walk around one day and we are a walking soul. The body works for me. And we accomplish and we do and we literally become the light into the nations that we are destined to be. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful night.